What's going on, guys? This is Chris Mead back for another episode of My Biggest Lessons, hosted on the DTCX Exceptional E-Commerce Podcast. I got my good friend here, Chelsea Moore, CEO and co-founder of BoxFox. What's going on?
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm good. Thanks so much for coming on. So we were talking about 35 seconds ago before I hit record. And one, you got to give me like, you guys are a big ass company. And from the looks of it, I'm sure people are like, what the hell is this? Like, why do I want to work with you guys as a vendor? Give us the quick story in the intro. And then also like, where are you guys in scale right now? What is BoxFox?
For sure. So BoxFox is your go-to for gifting. We are a gifting company. We launched in November of 2014, me and my two co-founders, Jenny and Sabina. And we really just felt we were 21. We felt like our entire community had completely disbanded after college for good reasons. They're all very successful now, but off to grad school, off to med school, off to law school. And here were us three just kind of like working in advertising and not in med school and whatever. And people's lives start to happen real fast after college, and really scary things happen, like illnesses and sicknesses, and also really happy things like engagements and babies. And it felt like, how do you be a part of people's lives in a tangible way, even when you can't physically be there? And that was something that kept coming up. And we just really thought, what if there was a plugin where I could sit at my desk, but I could pick out my favorite things from all my favorite stores, including my local boutiques, including Michael's Arts and Crafts. And it looked amazing and up to our aesthetic standard, and it shipped quickly, and it didn't exist. So we built it. And that's what Build a BoxFox is, our main platform on our website where you can build custom gifts and care packages from all the best brands in one place, ones you know and love, ones we now manufacture. It's quite the smattering now. And then of course, with this came corporate gifting. So we do a lot of corporate gifting, private label media mailers, ghost fulfillment for brands, things like that, because we, from the beginning, made a conscious decision to own all of our own fulfillment and employ all of our own fulfillment. And because internally, not only do we have a service that we love and we love our customers and making that better, but the practice of management and like the experience of building a business and being like in and out and being able to have a living wage for all sorts of people and things like that has always been really North Star wrapped up in this whole experience for us. And so we do have 3PL vendors that support us when our big shipments overseas come in and we have staging areas and things like that. But every box that people receive is hand-packed by someone on our team in-house. And so we are going to be 8 this year. We are profitable. We are, I say self-funded because we are privately owned, but obviously we lean on bank financing and SBA loans. And I don't know anybody who's not like Michael Bloomberg, who's just doing it themselves, but we are privately owned still. We don't have any outside investment. We're doing great. We've got about 47 employees right now. A lot of that is warehouse staff and fulfillment staff, but I mean, our corporate sales team has 8 people on it. It's pretty robust. And yeah, we're doing
That's
good.
Awesome.
We're doing great.
So a lot of the brands that come on here are brands, right? They're not boxing or gifting. They're sales direct to consumers or retail.
Or whatever it might be. Yeah.
Exactly. Just for the listeners that are unaware, they're like, revenue size, over 8 figures? How are we looking like on a month-to-month?
We're eight figures. Healthily is not a word. We're in the healthy 8 figures.
I love it. That's amazing. That's so, so cool. So we had the inspiration getting out of college, obviously a need for it. I mean, for me, right? If I want to mail something to my mom who lives in Sarasota, I have 2 options, either ship her a bunch of shit on Amazon and it looks terrible, or you guys are doing it, right? So like when you're comparing the cost analysis with 3PLs, is it more costly to do it with a 3PL, or you guys are doing it in-house because you just don't want to give that up, or like talk me through that?
Yeah, for sure. When you send a gift box from us, it is so thoughtfully and aesthetically packed that it's been almost impossible to replicate with a 3PL. It's just not. Because we've done big indoor things with Nordstrom and Anthropologie and Urban. And when we did those projects, we did try to lean on 3PLs for support. Always falls flat. People work hard, but we work harder. Like, it's just not going to look to our up to stuff. And it does cost a lot more, I would say. I mean, the economics of it, yes, it's a bigger headache. We have a lot more management that goes into it. We have healthcare and things like that. But to me, like, I wouldn't trade it because they're both hard. It's just hard in different ways. So, but I would say it's definitely more cost effective to do it yourself. Other costs when you're starting out will come, but at our size, it's kind of been fine. But yeah, I mean, it's hard in different ways. 3PL, it's out of sight, out of mind. But for us, it's so high touch. It's so personalized that it just makes sense to build it into our systems and scale it.
Yeah, we've seen the same thing. So like in Australia and Europe, we'll use a 3PL. But here in the States, we'll have a whole fulfillment team. And like, sure, maybe we could save some money some months when we're not shipping as much volume. But there's times like, hey, we just made a mistake where there's a typo on the box and we're about to ship like 5,000 of them out. I got to have the whole team sticker them, label them. And that's only an hourly cost compared to a 3PL being like, you owe me $10,000 to do this. Otherwise, it's not getting done.
And so we've been burned by 3PLs in the past because like when we did that Nordstrom project, the 3PL just didn't deliver. I want to say 1,000 of one of the SKUs one day. And to this day, the gnarliest day in BoxBox history was November 2018, I think, when this was. And we had boyfriends, siblings, parents of everybody in our warehouse for 2 days straight doing crazy math, packing stuff like crazy. And then I'm over here being like, oh my God, palletizing for doors. They have these super complicated orders. And I'm like rain manning, like, okay, $4 shipper, $6 shipper, da da da, go. And they're like, oh my God, it was the most insane thing in my life. So yeah,
that's crazy. We've been burned by that. I can imagine. So I know you're trying, I won't mention names, but I know that you want to get a specific water bottle company that I'm happy to be friendly with as a retailer account. How does that work? Do you guys take in excessive inventory? Let's pretend you bring in CrossNet as a boxing item. How would that relationship work for me? Like, unless it's brick and mortar, I try to stay away from any other like online retailers because I want full margin. But obviously this would be an exception. It's like, is it worth my time to work with somebody that's going to be a gifting? Like, talk to me about that deal structure and how that looks like. Do you take on all that inventory? And I'm sure there's been times where you bought all this shit and it didn't move, right? So like, how does that work?
Great question. I love being on a podcast with someone who like gets the vibe and we can talk about like the actual gritty things. For us, there are definitely people that say no to us and it goes in waves, right? When we first got started, it was really hard to get those good accounts in the beginning. And then we kind of went through like during COVID, we were ready to level up with some other brands. And I would say beauty is the hardest. They have very specific distribution channels, Sephora, the whatever. And Sephora locks people into exclusivity like you would not believe. Like, it's really hard to get the beauty brands. But for us, we do take on the inventory liability, but we do have a lot. We move products. Like, I think people wouldn't understand. I think there's still people that think we're just two sorority girls in a garage making gift boxes, but like, that could not be farther from the truth. We move product. And so we use our past purchase history. We do not oversell things. Like, we sell out of everything. It might be at a different cadence with each other, but we're not taking on too risky of a thing. But usually, like, we do take on the inventory liability. We do negotiate a lot of net 60. Like, we're not as crazy as Nordstrom, where it's like when they decide to pay you, they pay you. Like,
Walmart.
But it usually does. The net terms will outpace our sell rate, which is good, or whatever. You get what I mean?
No, of course. And that's so important too. Like, that's a good lesson right there, is like not taking on retail accounts that, like, if you take on a net 120 account when you're a new business, like, you could be shooting yourself in the foot. If you start, so many e-commerce people are like, Chris, I want to get into Walmart, and they're like a year into business. Like, that will cripple your business if you don't have outside funding.
What people don't realize is, in order to do the big boxes or QVC, which is a different like world, but like still, you need money to make money. So for someone like your brand, we would reach out. We definitely make our case. Like, I think that there is such a benefit to people that discover brands or get to gift with brands via box, because not only every single thing that ships from our site, whether it's personal relationships or professional relationships, it is so personalized because those notes are handwritten by our team at scale.
That's awesome.
And there's a sentiment that comes with our boxes that you can't replicate when you just send somebody something from Crate and Barrel with a pre-printed thing. Like, it's just not possible. It's always going to make you feel like, holy crap, they put this together for me. And so with that, I always tell brands, I'm like, you want to be the candle that came for their 30th birthday. Like you do, because every time they burn it, they're going to think of that person. They're going to think of you. For us, we do prioritize aesthetic. And so we represent brands in a really beautiful way. And that's another value add I think that we like to bring to the table. It's like, we are going to capture your brand in a stunning way. It's going to be it's going to feel almost UGC, but it's not, because it's going to be a little more polished, which is the sweet spot. So yeah, that's kind of, I mean, how we do it. People definitely say no to us. People have other priorities. Beauty is,
of course,
is the drama. I was telling you before we started recording, but back in the day, I wanted to work with Corksicle, and I'll call them out because we work with them for years now. But I remember, like, I would be emailing people, and I, no fault to them. People have other priorities. I could barely keep my days straight. I was berating them, like, we want to be a wholesale stockist. We want to be a stockist. We want to be a stockist. Either they said no, or they wouldn't hear me when I was like, we're not a subscription box. Because people see BoxBox, and if they don't know who we are, they automatically assume it's a subscription model where I'm asking for thousands of units for 50 cents. That's not, you know, what we're doing. I'm like, we're just a resale. But they wouldn't get back to me. And so I ended up going to New York Now, which is the gifting show in New York City years ago. And I went and I found them and I found the founder. And I was like, hey, buddy, I'm trying to spend tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars with you, dude. And now we work with them, and they're fantastic and they're lovely. And it was sometimes, or like, we work with Way Hair Care, Jen Atkins hair care brand. And I wanted it so bad. I was like, this is going to move. And I ended up going. This was so creepy. They had a marketing pop-up in West Hollywood. And I like was like, well, I'm going to go. And it was so funny because it was like 11 a.m. So I was like one of the only people who showed up. And I saw her get out of her car. And I was like, hey, I really want to sell Way on BoxBox. But I mean, it ended up working out and we sell them and it's fantastic. But
that's awesome.
Sometimes you got to get a little strategic, like our team reaching out to you about this certain water bottle brand
that we're trying to get hold of. Exactly.
Also, a lot of times when companies are getting bigger, they have gatekeepers that are just trying to protect the brand. And then eventually you get to a decision maker, and usually I can make our case.
Exactly. No, that makes sense. And in the early days, it seemed like you're kind of scrappy going to these trade shows. Is that still a part of your strategy? Because like, that was for us. And now we kind of pulled back where it's hard to really track. I mean, for you, it must be easier, right? Like you go to a trade show, you sign a big ass client, you're bringing in hundreds of thousands of revenue. Like you could say, hey, this trade show is worth the money or not. Is that still a part of your guys' strategy or no?
Not so much. I think COVID really streamlined when we leave our office. I mean, we have a buyer and merchandiser, Nyla, who now that COVID is kind of over, she might like dabble in the best trade shows just to see, like, we like to keep our finger on the pulse of new brands and what's hot, what's not. So she'll probably go to Atlanta if she can this year, or New York Now. Those are the best ones, I would say. I'd say more importantly, our corporate team is doing a lot more networking events, and that's still really important to get corporate clients. So they're starting now that this, like, the world's opened up a bit more. It's so nice to get back into that thing. You get to a certain place, and I'm sure you feel this way too, where you really have to protect your peace, and you can't do everything, and you need to be able to work out and meditate and eat well, or you're going to die. So
absolutely.
Because I could work all day. When COVID first started and you literally had nowhere to go, I was working.
Grinding.
All day. And then finally, like midsummer of that year, I was like, I gotta calm down. I need to like not bring my computer into the house anymore, because we have a back office. I'm like, I think we need to leave the computers in the back office. Like I was going crazy.
No, absolutely. So that's actually a good conversation. And I have one question I want to get to, but we'll get to it later. It's like, when did you find yourself? So you're almost on, you said year eight, right? It's going to be the eighth birthday.
We're going to be eight in November.
Cool. When did you find yourself kind of like working outside of the business rather than inside the business? And I've had 10 people mention that phrase to me today, but for me, it's been, I could be moving shit around in Shopify and moving code and doing all that. That's not the best use of my time as a founder. When did it hit you where you're like, dude, I need to stop doing this? And how did you like, it's weird to go to your other founder and be like, yo, we need to spend 100K so I could kind of meditate and do yoga right at 9 a.m. So like, how does that work?
No, I think that it ebbs and flows, right? For us at least. So one of our co-founders actually stepped back. She's still on the board, and we talked to her, and she's still our friend. But Jenny and I run the business day to day now. And for us, I would say it totally oscillates. Okay, wait, let me back this up. Jenny and I have the true north of we are not looking for an acquisition or an IPO anytime soon. We are enjoying this. We have a goal number of where we want to get to on an annual basis. This is the experiment of life. We are fully enjoying this life and building this together, right? So that I think that's an important thing to say first. Because of that, it oscillates. Like, I'll be completely honest. I worked 3 straight weeks in the warehouse on top of my CEO duties this past December because hiring was so difficult in this, like, for that specific type of labor. Even when
who wants to work when you get free money from the government? Yeah, exactly.
I didn't want to say it, but it was.
I said it.
And we have a great workplace. I mean, we're LA County. We have a high minimum wage. We feed, like, Christmas is the best. It's like camp here. We feed people. We have a good time. Yeah. I mean, me, Jenny, and our director of operations were doing full warehouse shifts 5.5 days a week on top of our duties. So, like, I would say it's a season, right? And then I very specifically remember those first 3 months of COVID, me, Jenny, and Vivian working in the warehouse again. So, like, that to me is in the business. And you're right. I could be tinkering on Shopify. I could be doing this stuff. But I will say, like, year 5 is when we finally got out of being full time in the business. And now it's because we care, because this is a long game for us. There are seasons. There are things that happen. There are shipments that get delayed. And I'm the one that does know the code. And I do go in and turn the big cream boxes off. Like, that still happens. But I say, like, Jenny and I have built this very high level annual schedule of things that have to get done at the high level. Jenny and I still personally curate every single ready to ship box with our data, our creative, our everything. We reach out to the brands, we talk about custom products. So, like, we just finished Christmas. We did that. We had to go do a founder retreat for 3 days where we're, like, up here doing Christmas, doing the mood board, setting up the briefs for the designers, like, all of that. And that's, I guess, technically in the business, but, like, it's both. I don't know. It also,
it's still fun. As long as it's still fun. Yeah, exactly.
It definitely feels after year 5, so much better. 2020 was hard, I think, for everybody because we just were like, sales wise, it was fantastic. And the problem was just incapable of keeping up. And then 2021 was like, let's not over project. Let's not get too big for our britches. So it was like, and we were very conservative. So we did fine. It was crazy.
Yeah. No, yeah, that was a hard lesson for us. 2020 was probably, we went from 2 million in revenue to like 9 million. Yeah. And our margin was insane because it was just all organic, people desperate for something to do. And then we get back to the drawing board of, hey, we want to sell this one day. How do we beat those numbers? But that was just like the most unrealistic outlier type of year. So then you just spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on stupid shit just to try to move the needle.
And I don't know if you really felt this too, but like I felt like mid-21, all that weird Facebook paid stuff. And like, I remember being in that D2C Slack channel thing we're all in and people are like, what the hell is going on? Because all of a sudden, we had never in our entire business ever misprojected our B2C website. To this day, we are almost word for what we say we'll make online, we will make online. It's crazy.
Well, that's a good feeling. That's a great feeling.
Because we do it so thoughtfully. But last summer, it went off pace for a second and I was spiraling. I was like, what in the hell on earth? And it's just also a reminder, we started businesses during this boom, right? Like even us, it was a post-recession business. We started in 2014. We started working on it in 2014. The best time. It's the market's been nothing but for the overall for the last 7-8 years. So like, and my dad always said when we started the business, you need to always be thinking about what does recession proof mean for you? What does longevity mean for you guys? What does meaningful diversification of revenue mean for you guys? I mean, COVID was a test in one way and then now our economy. I'm always thinking about that. I'm like, because for us, it's like these people's lives that work for us, that is a responsibility that we take so seriously. And COVID really punctuated that. And you just always have to be ideating.
Absolutely. So what do you do? One of my last questions then, what do you do What did you do when your numbers are kind of off projections, right? You maybe, let's just say you missed your numbers by 20%. The iOS thing's kind of tough for us. Like the last 2 months have been really rough. Thankfully, wholesale saved our ass, but that's not a crutch you want to lean on too much. What levers do you have to pull as a boxing gifting company, right?
The nice thing is we have the opportunity to be a fulfillment partner for people and ghost fulfillment for people. So like when people want to do private label media mailers or really niche personalized product, like corporate projects, that doesn't seem to have any relation to the economy. There's always the entertainment business. There's always kind of that spend. I think for us, when the iOS stuff happened, we hunkered down and we actually reprojected 2021 in the middle of the year, and we pulled back Q3 and Q4 projections accordingly. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad we did. And what we reprojected in June was chef's kiss, perfect to a T. We hit it and it's fine. We had to kind of get over the ego of not hitting where we thought we were going to hit. But for us, it was like, I'd much rather be conservative and hit this. So we just took the ego away. We had to funnel it down to our sales team and all their numbers and all of our brands. But honestly, by pivoting in June, July, we were able to prepare accordingly for our vendors for resale too.
That's great. And that's just such a good point, right? There's so many times where I fucked up as a founder, just like having this aggressive ego of, yo, I want a 2X next year. I want to go 100% like year-to-year growth. That's not realistic sometimes. And when you start like having these unrealistic projections because you need to hit this for whatever reason, you start making so many mistakes where you're overspending on marketing, overspending on headcount, doing just stupid things with the business. So like setting those projections, if anybody's listening and struggling or trying to build a business, like it all starts with your numbers and being realistic. And obviously you want to have these stretch goals, but hiring or doing anything on the marketing front before you do that, like that's where the biggest mistakes happen.
I agree. I think it's like be aspirational, but also be humble and like realistic. I got so in my own head last Black Friday, Cyber Monday. My co-founder will tell you, I was insufferable for like 3 days. Cause it's always for us, the pattern is like the shoe really doesn't drop until the Saturday after Thanksgiving. And then Saturday to Monday is usually like the beefiest thing that's ever happened. I've been trying to back engineer, taking advantage of the week prior for years and years. What's the right thing to do? What's the right thing to do? And, you know, I felt like we were going to miss. We didn't. It ended up being a beautiful Black Friday, Cyber Monday. But like, I was insufferable that entire weekend. I was like, I wanted to do this. This is the second time this year I've had to deal with this. And then once it started, but it's also just like, as long as you're being conservative, as long as you don't make any crazy rash spending and whatever, you can always adapt. You can always pull back. It's not the end of the world. Because the same way that you had to pull back one time, the COVID boon will happen again in another way. And you're like, oh my God, I'm on Oprah's Favorite Things and we've sold out of X or whatever. Like it could go both ways. And you can't have the highs without the lows.
Absolutely. And I think that's a good benefit and way we could leave, like owning our own destiny as we don't have outside capital. Like we are in complete control. And if we need to slow things down, like it sucks. Maybe we have to lower our salaries or take a bump here and there. But like, being in control of your own destiny and making it last as long as possible and being on your own plan, that's just a good way to sleep at night, at least.
Yeah. Are you guys privately owned still?
Yeah, we're still, us three founders own 100% of it.
I love it. That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, that's, to me, we started kind of when it was a pissing contest of what VC money can you raise? And I'm like, I got more from Ampla last week than I would get spending 3 months on the road trying to get around. It's time for that. Like, absolutely. I'm busy. And I don't need one press hit where it's like, so-and-so, whatever. Because, like, I think that's, A, I don't want to answer to anybody but my co-founders and our board, which is, like, us plus our families. And we just want to focus. We want to do good work. And we just want to, like, work hard and build this up as big as we can. And yeah, you're right. When you don't have to answer and you can completely pivot mid-year and no one's going to have a heart attack, it's amazing.
Absolutely. I appreciate you coming on, Chelsea. It's been a great conversation. I'm stoked for you guys. I'm so happy. Like, I know I'm going for you next time I need to buy my mom or somebody a gift for the holiday. Oh, yeah. So thank you so much for coming on.
Mother's Day launches next Tuesday. Yeah.
Let's go. I love it. Well, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. So that's another episode of My Biggest Lessons.
Each and every week, I'll be having one of my favorite entrepreneurs come on, share their stories, their mistakes, the things they wish they knew. Entrepreneurship's a lonely road, right? You only learn by getting better. You only learn by making mistakes. So I want them to come on, share their stories. If you have somebody in mind that you want on, drop a comment, subscribe, share with a friend. Let's get the best people in the world on here. Thanks for listening.